From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. Combine cameras, phones, and teenagers, and you get what's now being called selfie culture. Today, Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back to look at what he says is more than just a passing fad. The selfie culture is changing how teens and young adults see themselves, express their sexuality, communicate with each other, and develop relationships. While teens will claim the right to self-expression, parents and law enforcement worry about that right crossing legal lines. It's the good, the bad, and dare we say the ugly of selfie culture. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's called the selfie culture, and Dr. Wes Crenshaw said it's having a profound impact on our kids. The selfie culture is changing how young people see themselves, express themselves, and communicate. Too often that expression can get young people in trouble. What it all means and what parents should know is our topic this morning. With us once again is Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a board certified in couples and family psychology, and he's the co-author of the forthcoming book, Consent-Based Sex Education, Parenting Teens in an Internet Age. Good to have you, Dr. Wes.
Nice to be here.
Kyra Haas is with him. She's his co-author for both the Double Take Advice column in the Lawrence Journal World and Our Two Cents in Your Teen Magazine. Kyra, welcome back, too. Nice to have you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, Wes, to hear you talk about it, this selfie culture has simply exploded. What's going on out there?
Well, it's kind of funny because I used to think that having a camera in every pocket, which is really essentially what we see now, would be this amazing way that young people, particularly young women, could really kind of explore themselves and their bodies and how they looked. And it seemed like a really good idea. I mean, I almost can't believe how old I am sometimes, but back in the day when we would have those issues, body image issues or issues of self-image, we would send people in to get professional photography. Hmm. I did this a lot. And you'd have a mother and a daughter go in, and they would both come out of it, and the looks on their faces, they would be just feeling so good about themselves. And, of course, I don't know if those even exist now because we instead have selfies. And that's sort of the same idea, though the execution of it is not always as beautiful as my example there.
So you're saying that selfies today are all about self-image and ensuring that someone feels good about how they look? You're talking about women here mostly. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Boys, mainly their selfie is wearing a baseball cap backwards, I think. It's not, and this isn't even new. It took me a while to remember how we would do the professional photography. That's always been a popular thing, and you would do makeup, and you would look very beautiful before Photoshop was really as prominent as it is now. Yeah. It kind of goes back and fixes some of those things. But this is the natural extension. This is the high-tech extension of that idea. And, you know, it can either be a great enhancement to self-esteem or a detractor.
You know, Wes, what got you interested in this whole selfie situation as a teen trend? I mean, what's got you interested in this whole thing?
Well, partly because they just do it. They just do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we will talk later about Snapchat. That's become the new forum for that. But this is something that's so important to kids right now. And they have kind of two, at risk of tremendous reductive analysis here, there are roughly two ways you can do a selfie. There's the serious selfie, and there's the sort of fun, playful selfie, for lack of a better term. And so if you pose with your cat, and on my Twitter feed this morning, I put up a selfie of my cat just for fun. If you pose with your cat or your sister or your friend and you're, you know, making funny faces or something, that's kind of the typical fun selfie. The serious selfie is more like fashion photography. And you're trying to really put that same look you might see on 17 or glamour out there for people to see. And for many young women, they have this, you know, mastered at this point.
Kyra Hosh, you've been studying this topic for some time since you started working with Wes. What do you see going on out there? What are you thinking about all this? And what's all this business about fashion photography that Wes is talking about?
Well, I think in, I guess, studying selfies, basically going through my Instagram.
You've done more than that.
Right.
I
think that you see a wide range of people using selfies to express all sorts of things. I think you see like researchers who say, oh, you know, it's linked to narcissism. Oh, it's linked to low self-esteem. And I think there's really like a spectrum there of some people who use like likes or whatever they get on Instagram to kind of boost themselves. But other people who are out there like, oh, I'm gracing the world with like the same image of my face in my bedroom 50 mm-hmm. million times.
Again and again and again.
Again and again and again. And so I think there's like a wide range of reasons people use selfies. And I don't think you can really peg it to just one thing. And as far as fashion photography, I think that's just another like outlet of that. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think everyone is doing that, but I think that is definitely, you know, a trend that some people have.
So how big a deal have selfies become in your world and with your friends and everything else?
Well, I don't think there are many people that I've met who have not taken a selfie. Actually, I visited my great-great-aunt, and I took her first selfie with me, like, last winter. And, I mean, I've seen your selfies on social media that you take with your guests sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think it really has just really permeated our culture, like, not just on my age group, but, like, across the board. You know, anyone who has a camera phone is doing this.
Well, Wes was saying a few minutes ago that the way boys approach selfies might be very different than the way young women approach selfies. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and I think, again, it's just there's just a wide range of people taking them for different reasons.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, my little brother, when he takes selfies, they're definitely not like glamour shots. Usually he's making a silly face. But there are, you know, like I've seen a couple of people on Instagram, like guys who, you know, kind of lean towards this fashion sense of the photo. And I think, I don't know, I think it just depends on the person.
Well, what else have you picked up from your own sort of study of this, your own research of selfies? What are you seeing out there?
I guess Wes has kind of talked about it already, but there's just a really, really wide range. I mean, mm-hmm. I kind of lean towards the taking pictures with my cat side of things. And I don't know what that says about like my self-confidence, but then there's a lot of people who, you know, they take those like more fashionable photos in their, I don't know, in like their bathroom or their bedroom or whatever, and put the same picture out there multiple times. So I guess, I mean, I've seen pretty much everything. You know, some people take those pictures to like document a moment, and then some people are just taking them to share their face with the world, I guess.
So the concern here, Wes, is what? Sort of where do you begin to intersect with this whole idea of the selfie culture?
The psychology of it is kind of complicated. And one of the things, and Kyra and I have spent several months sort of comparing notes on different selfies we see, mostly on Twitter. I'm more of a Twitter person. Instagram is not my thing, but you can see plenty of selfies on Twitter. And what I think I see is sort of two ways that follow psychology. You have a idea called defensive narcissism, which is a person setting forth a bravado in themselves mm-hmm. so that they're covering up feelings of inadequacy. I think that exists in the selfie culture where young people, predominantly, again, young women, some of them are really trying awfully hard, and maybe they don't feel very good about themselves.
Trying hard to do what?
To convey this facade of feeling comfortable, mm-hmm. of being very beautiful or expressing great beauty. And if you follow their Twitter feeds, what they write, it will go back and forth. There will be all sorts of angst about body image and condemning other people for picking on people's body size or type. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you'll see 30 of these pictures that are what we would call serious selfies. Many of them are pretty good pictures. And then they'll all of a sudden say, I wish that people knew how much I hate myself. Mm-hmm. And you think, wow, this person really isn't holding themselves out the way they feel inside. Now, on the other hand, I want to give the other side of it. I think there are many young people who really build self-esteem by looking at themselves and saying, I'm prettier than I thought I was, or I can make a nice picture. There's several people I follow that I would put their pictures in a gallery.
Mm-hmm.
They are so well done. They're not just selfie, but they involve, you know, a way of doing light or a way of doing the objects around them using pillows or clothing that are really artistic. And this is something that in art class has always been a part of the curriculum. You do your self-portrait.
Well, clearly I've got to pick up my game here, it sounds like, when it comes to my selfies I shoot here with some of our guests.
And Kyra and I can work with you after the show on that.
Well, so are your concerns directed mainly at young women, Wes? Is that what we're talking about here?
I think to simply understand that makeup has always been an important thing to young women. Recently, I took a look at myself on television, and I looked at everyone around me in the studio, and I said, something's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized what it was. So I had breakfast with Kyra that morning and bravely marched down to Weaver's in Lawrence and had the young women at the counter help me with my makeup needs.
Mm-hmm.
Once I had seen myself on camera after that, it was like a whole new world. And I said to Kyra sheepishly, I said, wow, I see why you people like makeup. And her eyes grew wide, and she said, I know, isn't it amazing?
And look what that can do for you.
Indeed. Yeah. So I'm not ready to maybe wear it every day, although some people may think I should.
Yeah.
But that is an example of how young women have for many decades used a product to make themselves feel better about how they present to the world. Now, we can argue whether that's good or bad or false or real or whatever, but I think it varies from person to person. If that's authentic to them, then that's authentic. And that's the core issue and the core difference between guy selfies and girl selfies at this point.
So where does the abuse of selfies begin to encroach here in what we're talking about? Where do those issues begin to arrive here?
I think that when it's an interesting question. When you say abuse of selfies, I presume you mean when it becomes a detractor to the person's self-esteem or when they're using it in a way to be harmful. And those two things we have seen.
Mm-hmm.
I think when a person, just like with, say, anorexia, everybody agrees that it is good to be at the lower end of your weight spectrum from a health standpoint. That's just that the people at the health clinics tell us this. But for people with anorexia, they go overboard. They become, if you want to use the term, abusive of themselves to get to such a low weight mm-hmm. that they're not even in any standard of health. Likewise with selfies, if you are so preoccupied with your physical appearance that this becomes the core of who you are, I think this is a problem. And at that point, parents really need to talk to kids about you don't want to say things like you don't have self-respect. That mm-hmm. never is a good way to look at this. But to say you're more than just how you look, that's important. But there are many other parts of character that are critically important, not just how you appear.
Kyra, how often do you see folks who get to the point that Wes just described where they really begin to concentrate heavily on their self-image almost to an unhealthy point?
I think in my age group, I see...
And you're how old right now?
I'm 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, I don't know, probably around like 14 to 20, I would say that like out of the people I follow on Instagram or that I see on Instagram, probably like 20 or 30% of those people wow. are a little, like, over the top. It's like you can't just go out to dinner and just have dinner. You have to take a picture and prove to everyone, like, that you went out with people mm-hmm. or that you did this or you did mm-hmm. that. And I don't think that's necessarily healthy. I think you have to find some sort of balance between actually living life and then documenting it as well.
I've got friends. Look. Right?
Yes,
I've
right.
got good friends, lots of friends. Yeah, that right. kind of thing.
And look how cute I look with my friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the people you're talking about, you might be concerned about, are they all women?
They're not all women, but the majority are.
Mm-hmm.
And this fits with what we've seen in women. They are networkers. They are relational people, as Gilligan talked about in a different voice. That we don't want to take away from or make them into, you know, lone wolf men or something. That they are, as a culture, a relational culture. And so it makes sense that these tools would become a way to express that. But when you are, and I see this a lot, when you're kind of desperately worried that you won't get enough likes on your evening out with your friends, or you aren't doing, you're sitting at home and look at what fun things people are doing and you're not, this can really begin to affect a person and how they see their worth in their social environment.
We're talking about the selfie culture this morning with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's joined by Kyra Haas, who co-authors several columns with Wes Crenshaw. We're interested in getting our listeners involved. For you parents out there, how concerned are you about the selfie culture and what you see happening with your kids, how they're using or abusing these things? And if you're a teen at home on spring break, and we know there are a lot of you out there right now and you want to chime in here, we'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888. The selfie culture is our topic today. We have an email asking us this question. While many teen girls are practicing 17-like magazine poses, are selfies stratifying girls with less than 17 magazine figures? How will that affect these girls long term?
Yeah, great question. So I don't know what Kyra thinks, but this is my analysis. I think that there is a good conversation going on social media about this issue. One of the people I follow is not a small girl, and she posts selfies that are really pretty good selfies. They're designed to not hide her size, but to make her look good like a selfie would do. And I think that is a confident person. I read her tweets. I think about what she's saying, and she's pretty confident. She's bold. She says what she wants to say. There is a lot of dialogue about judging each other's bodies on social media. Some of it, I think, is a little bit in the defensive narcissism category. Stop judging me, that kind of thing. But other is pretty intelligent. One of the ones that's very popular right now, and you can love it or hate it, is this idea that Chelsea Handler has gotten big on, that women should be able to have bare chests. There should be no reason that they cannot have bare chests. And Chelsea Handler,
she's talking about this?
Oh yeah, she's got a picture of her on a horse, topless, next to, I think we've decided it's Putin, haven't we?
I haven't
and
seen
she
it.
she tweeted that out and said, if men can do this, so can women. And so she had some party the other day where like people were sending her topless photos. This may be a serious movement. I thought it was just sort of funny. This may end up being a serious movement.
And what's she thinking about this?
Is saying that women should be, this is more than just Chelsea. This has been a number of people on Twitter in this conversation about body image, are saying that women should not hide their breasts. They should not have to, that it should not be obscene to just show your breasts riding a horse like Vladimir Putin. So this is the one of many dialogues you see going around social media right now about body image, about loving your body, being positive about it. In a non-selfie version of this, you're from Minnesota, right? Okay, so I don't know if you ever noticed this, but when I go to Wisconsin and Minnesota, it is a very different experience of women at amusement parks and out in public of their bodies. There is a great deal more comfort as expressed by the clothing they wear than there is in some other parts of the country, regardless of size or shape or age or anything else. And my theory, though I cannot prove it other than psychological observation, is that in those northern cultures, body image is healthier probably than it is in, say, cities in Miami and Dallas and L.A., that there's an inch thick of yellow pages for plastic surgery. So this is now beginning to show up on social media where people are talking about those kind of issues, and a big part of it is the pictures people post.
We've been having some phone issues, but they're back up now. If you tried to call a couple of minutes ago and couldn't get through, try it again, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, to what extent are parents out there aware of all this, Kyra, and concerned about it? Because I'm guessing that a lot of parents aren't even in the loop about all this.
I think probably most of them aren't. I think if they're posting those photos on Facebook, they probably have a better knowledge of that. But
because
as far
parents
as,
might go to Facebook more often than other forms of social media.
Yeah. And on Twitter and other things. But I don't think that it's really like a parent's, many parents' priority. I don't think that's what they're thinking about when they're thinking about the well-being of their kid. I think they're thinking about how well they're doing in school and like what they're participating in extracurricular wise. And I think their use or take their selfie, like how many selfies they're taking, I don't think that often enters into conversation. I think it's kind of pushed to the side. I don't know if that's healthy or not, but.
Wes, what do you think? Are parents engaged in all this, or is this so all this happening sort of outside of their supervisory range of control?
I'm pretty sure they're not as connected as they should be. I had to have I'm pretty tech savvy and stay up on all of this, and I had to have Kyra walk me through Snapchat the other day, in large part because it has become the tool of social interplay amongst teens. And 2 years ago or a year and a half ago when it first came out, we had a couple of young people on the show talking with us about it. And at that time, it was really associated with sexting, which we'll talk about in the next half hour. And the pictures, it would the shot would disappear after a few seconds. So the theory was that you could send a explicit picture to someone and it would disappear. And Emily Van Schmoos shared with us at that time, no, all you got to do is screenshot it, which young people very quickly figured out. But Snapchat has...
Just to preserve it,
Right, exactly. And then you would keep the picture that was supposed to just be a temporary flash, basically. So now Snapchat is the bomb. I mean, that is the way kids date. It is the way kids...
What do you mean it's the way kids date?
They, one of the first things you do in a dating relationship is start Snapchatting each other when you are just beginning to get to know. It's part of what's really, I used the term dating, that's incorrect. It's part of the talking procedure when you're talking with someone.
And Kyra, you're shaking, you're nodding your head in agreement there.
That's
he's got it,
Sure.
And it's what, the way I think of it is sort of, like Kyra and I will see something we think is interesting for the column or interesting in life, take a picture of it and text each other. And so, or sometimes we just text dumb things like I sent her the cat selfie I was going to post today just to be funny. So that's a way we can communicate information through pictures. Pictures worth 1,000 words. Snapchat is essentially the reverse of that, where the picture is the dominant medium. So then you can add some little words to it, but the picture is mostly the communication or the video now.
So as the kids are beginning to date, what are they shooting pictures of that sort of furthers the cause here? I wouldn't.
I got to get up to speed on this.
So what's happening there?
Well, when people first start dating, I think they use Snapchat, hopefully, just to get to know each other. You know, you can send like a short video or you can send pictures of yourself. And so it's kind
A short video of you doing what?
You can send of whatever you're around, or you can send a video of you, I don't know, a person I Snapchat quite regularly. We send back and forth like lip sync battles, that kind of thing.
Oh.
And so I guess it adds a more personal element, I suppose, than just texting, because when you're just writing with words, sometimes you miss out on like another element, or you can use them together. But I think hopefully people are just sending pictures of their faces or whatever they're doing
just
at the time.
Just sort of silly stuff, or just be trying to be express your personality through your photographs somehow?
My experience has been mostly silly stuff, yes.
Yeah.
And it's good to know the term for this is it's your Facebook story. And this goes up.
Snapchat story.
What did I say? Facebook. Sorry. Snapchat story. This is the reason I keep Kyra around. She fixes the dumb things I say. The Snapchat story is you post this to their server and it lives there until the person on your network gets it and looks at it. And they have a certain number of seconds you've set to look at it. And the the story is a pretty good name for it. This is what the kids talk about now, young people talk about. It's your story. It's your life. And so you may take a picture of you, you know, with a funny face or reading the paper or whatever, and you're sharing yourself with others through this visual medium.
Okay, well, there's been a lot written and discussed about how selfie culture produces or reflects narcissism in teens and young adults. What do you think about that?
Well, it you know, we talked a little bit about it earlier, but
because there's a huge element of that in all this, right?
There is. I think that it, you know, people always want to have it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
We complain that young people don't have good self-esteem, and then when young people are trying to say, this is how I look and this is what I do and I want to, you know, this is myself, then we say, oh, you're being narcissistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in many ways it is a good thing. I think it has, like every good thing, it has all sorts of problematic permutations. But in general, I wouldn't fear it. I would just learn to consume it wisely.
Okay. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll sort of turn our conversation to something a little more concerning to a lot of folks, which is sexting. And Wes, I'm guessing that a lot of parents out there listening to this are sort of scratching their heads, trying to keep up with what in the world we're talking about here, right?
It only gets weirder in the next half hour.
Yeah, okay. Well, hang on for that. Again, we're talking this morning about the selfie culture with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Kyra Haas is also here. We'll take your phone calls and questions, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to UpToDate on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation on Kansas City homicide rates or our talk on American culture with an Irish comedian, you can find those at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the show, the ship that brought us into World War I, plus a National Geographic photographer talks about her time with the world's oldest culture. That's tomorrow on our show. This hour, we're talking about the selfie culture with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Kyra Haas is also here. She works with Dr. Wes over in Lawrence on a number of his publications. We're going to talk a little bit in this half about the darker side of the selfie culture involving teens producing and sending explicit pictures. They may see themselves as a harmless part of self-expression, but for many underage teens, this still constitutes child pornography, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And maybe, Wes, time for a shout-out to your wife, who's up for Kansas Teacher of the Year. I mean, good for her.
Well, I'll tell you, I joked on my website that I haven't seen her since 2003 when Alex was born, because she's always up at the middle school preparing herself. Yeah, and this is the life of teachers. They work really hard, and it takes a tremendous amount of energy to put oneself into the classroom to really teach. And so I'm super proud of her. She's been at this for a few years.
Well, we've been talking about sexting pictures and photographs before, but give us a little bit of history on how this emerged, Wes. What have you seen out there?
I remember the day.
Yeah, yikes.
So well. And phones came out with cameras on them. And texting. And about 20 minutes later, I got a call from the office that someone had taken pictures at the behest of her boyfriend of her naked body, and that the boyfriend and she had broken up, and now the pictures were being transmitted to all his friends.
Boy.
And I said, this was, I'd have to go back and look at the column we wrote about this, but it's quite a few years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you don't even remember a time when cameras didn't have phones, do you, Kyra? No,
yeah.
I didn't think so.
She's smiling. Yeah, of course not.
And so we immediately, my thought was immediately, well, my gosh, they're underage. They're producing child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And that was everybody's thought for a while. And that was the angle of attack we went on in the column. And about a year later, it had become so commonplace that we wrote two columns back to back. One said, don't do this. This is producing child pornography. And the next week we said, if you're going to do this, then here are the security procedures you have to go through. You can't trust other people. You need to hold the chip, all these things, because we knew we weren't getting people to stop. They needed to just start exercising greater sense.
Mm-hmm.
About that time, a 14-year-old girl shared with me that she had made a video with her boyfriend. And I understood what kind of video she meant because, you know, now we had, by this time, we had video on phones or on small cameras. And she said, now, you know, she's tearful. She says, now we broke up and he won't give it back to me. And so I suggested to her, she remind him that he had documented a sex act with a person who's under the legal age of consent in Kansas, and he might want to give it up. And it took him a whole day to make the decision to delete it. A whole day. I would have been like 2 minutes. That was my initiation into how much video and photo culture had become a way to document full-on sexual acts. And what I began to realize was two things. Kids weren't thinking about the permanency of that digitized image.
That's been an issue since the dawn of the internet age, right?
That's right. Not only its permanency, but also its transportability, that it could easily get moved around. Well, then that part made sense. Then the shocking turn of events in this story was that week by week, month by month, year by year, this became less and less upsetting. So a young person would come in and say, oh my gosh, I had all of the pictures I took with Fred. Oh, there, he's got them all on the chip, and he starts showing his friends. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And she's like, yeah, he's an idiot.
And that'd be it.
That's it. And today.
So the level of outrage has declined.
Yeah. That's right. And I actually think this whole bare breasts thing, and I'm not weighing in on the politics of that. That I think that's for women to figure out, and I support whatever they figure out. But I think the whole idea of this is actually growing out of an increasingly desensitized view of showing your body in the media.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We're talking about the selfie culture. We're talking about sexting. Parents, how concerned are you out there about this selfie culture and sexting? And if you're a teen at home on spring break and you want to chime in here, we'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. What are the boys thinking about this, Wes? We're talking about women. What are the boys thinking?
I think that boys are not disappointed that young women have been very happy to share. And young men are equally happy to share. It is, I shall try to speak of this in a discreet manner, but it is a fairly common behavior to take a picture of one's manhood and to share that around almost like a calling card to say, here is what I have available. And I know this not because boys come in and they say, I have my calling card, but because girls do. They say, oh, so-and-so sent me a picture. It has a name, a rhyming name. And the response for some young women is, oh, my God, that's so gross. And other people are like, that was looking pretty good. So there is boys are in no way immune from this, and it is a common procedure.
Kyra, weigh in here. What are you hearing from your friends? I mean, have you seen some of these calling cards that get sent around? Is this sort of fairly common stuff?
Well, I don't think people talk about it just casually. It's not something we bring up at the lunch table very often. But if I were to like put a percentage on it of people around me who are engaging in that type of behavior, I would probably say about half.
Wow.
And that might be
half.
That might be, you know, a little lower than it actually is, just because, again, like people, like some people just aren't talking about it at the lunch table. So,
well, this notion that Wes just threw out, that sort of the sense of outrage that a boyfriend, as he related, might have these photographs of a girlfriend in a compromising position, that the sense of outrage and concern about that appears to be dissipating over time. Have you sensed that as well? Because that's a really interesting dynamic out there, if in fact that's the case.
I think I would have to agree with Wes, yeah, because, I mean, as, you know, that kind of content has become more available on the internet and people are becoming aware that, you know, if I text this, like, I mean, not as much as maybe they should be, but if I text something, people can save it, people can screenshot it, people can put it on Twitter. And I think that understanding has kind of desensitized that whole interaction.
And the ramifications of that, Dr. Wes, are fairly profound, I would imagine here, right?
It is. I think it was interesting to follow Jennifer Lawrence's experience of this, because if you're a celebrity at this point, it seems that you all always have an experience. But hers is particularly poignant. Somebody hacked her iCloud.
Right.
And she was not posting these. She wasn't transmitting to anyone. She was going through what we in our article a few years ago would have said was a pretty good security
safe behavior
procedure.
Yeah.
Yes. And then someone... And they actually, if you look at how they did it, it's pretty helpful to think about internet security using to understand their protocol for breaking in there. And I thought she did the most remarkable job in that interview in Vanity Fair. She went as far as to say showing these pictures to people is a sex crime because I did not consent. Mm-hmm. I did not say this was okay. And it's a very good article. If you haven't read it, I think this is a very intelligent young woman who has a lot to say and reacted at just the right level of frustration. She also is saying that, you know, it's my body and I get to choose what I do with it. If I want to make pictures and put them on my iCloud, no one should judge me for that.
Yeah.
And boy, did she shut down the complainers quickly about that. So I think maybe now that's been said well, but I'm not sure the outrage. I think she is of a generation where that's more outrageous even than in Kyra's age group.
Mm-hmm. The selfie culture, sexting, all kinds of things are on the table here this morning with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Kyra Haas is here, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. John from Leawood. John, good morning. You're on Up to Date.
Yeah, thank you. I was calling in to mention that many of these photos and pictures taken on phones today are encoded with what's called EXIF data, which gives the time and geolocation of where they were taken. I think people don't often bring it up enough that the miners taking these pictures, if they are distributed around the internet, they're taking along with them the exact time and location, which is in many cases their homes.
To just give a little more layperson's view of that, when I was looking for office space in Johnson County, I would take pictures of the sign for lease, and then later I would pull those onto my computer, and it would pull a pin on a map and show right where the picture was taken. Hmm. That's encoded in the way that he is describing. I think the other thing that bears pointing out here is that I think law enforcement has had a very difficult time knowing what to do with this. Back when we first were seeing this, young men were the ones being held accountable, and they were having to go to classes if they had pictures of girls on their phone, and they had to learn how to, you know, not molest people, basically. Very quickly that went away because it became apparent that they weren't just the offender here, that everyone was a participant in this. Mm-hmm. And law enforcement has had a very hard time knowing how to respond to this, because if you were to adjudicate all of the people who are taking underage photos of themselves and others, the juvenile detention center would be pretty full.
The law clearly hasn't caught up with this, is what you're saying.
And I don't think it can.
Hmm. John?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the issue is that you're passing along more than the sensitive material. You're passing along identifying information. Maybe not the name, but the location of, in many cases, these people's homes or work.
Yes, absolutely true.
John, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's nice when the techie people call.
Yeah, and they can keep track of all this stuff, right? Yeah. And again, you just wonder the extent to which parents of kids are aware of what's going on, this whole other world that their sons and daughters are engaged in, and they have absolutely no idea what's happening.
Yeah, Kyra and I were discussing this at breakfast today. On one hand, I am very thankful. Very thankful to you, to the show, to media in general, that I can go on public radio here in St. Louis, around the country, and talk about sex and sexuality and teenagers and parenting. This is a great era where we can have this honest conversation. On the other hand, I am concerned that as the bigger conversation goes on, as pornography becomes more apparent, as it becomes more and more common for kids to very openly discuss sex with each other, that parents are becoming a little desensitized to it, and they're sort of throwing up their hands and thinking, well, what can we do? We're overwhelmed by media. And that is not our message today. Our message is parents need to be involved in this conversation.
Well, speaking of parents, Patty from Kansas City, Missouri is calling in. Patty, good morning. I'm glad you called. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I just have a comment about what I call an adult. And what I call an adult, it has nothing to do with age, but it's being able to pay your bills, take care of yourself financially. And I've been in education a long time, and there's been a long, slow evolution of parents giving up their powers and kind of going belly up saying, oh, you know, I don't know what he's doing. And I just find it hard to believe that somebody, when you're paying for the phone monthly and upgrading it for your child, it doesn't really belong to them. So mm-hmm. How do parents get the courage to take back, you know, the upper hand here in terms of being leaders instead of letting kind of the foxes watch the chicken coop?
You know, Patty, I hope you'll hang on for a minute. You just asked the perfect question. That is the perfect question. How do parents get the courage back, in Patty's words, Wes, to begin to deal with this? Because there are legions of parents out there struggling with this. I know it for a fact.
I see it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a perfect response to the point I was making, that our message is parents have to get involved. That there are two ways that this issue plays out. The first is that, yes, parents just decide we can't do anything about it. And when they're challenged, and I say to them exactly what Patty just said, you are the owner of this phone. Minors cannot own property. I don't care if they pay for it or not. That doesn't give them the ability to broadcast whatever they want around mm-hmm. the world, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And parents say invariably, it's like we're being put in timeout if we take away the phone.
Mm-hmm.
We can't call him. We don't know where he is,
right.
So on and so on and so on.
Right.
Well, yes. So I will admit, you know, I've said it before in here, that it is like the nuclear bomb of discipline to take away a kid's phone.
Absolutely.
Because it is their way of interacting with the world. But if one does not act in specific response to the most egregious violations that these phones can be submitted to, then mm-hmm. one has given up all power. The other side of it is people will take away the phone for everything. You didn't clean out the cat box, the phone gets taken away for an hour.
Right.
You don't do your homework, the phone gets taken away. You don't, you get a bad grade, the phone gets taken away. Taking away phones needs to really be connected to phone misuse. And if
so, keep it symmetrical, yes, here in a sense.
That's a good way to put it. You take it, it synchronizes with the error. And so there are plenty of other things you can do to kids that connect to other mistaken behavior.
Yeah.
But the phone shouldn't be, if you don't want your kid transmitting sexually graphic images to their friends, by all means, state that's a death penalty for the phone. And some people have taken away the smartphones and given kids dumb phones. And just said, no camera, no, I don't know if you can get one without a camera,
yeah,
but no data plan, no nothing until we decide that you're a little more responsible.
Kyra, I want to ask you about how your parents handle it. Patty, I want to ask you the same question. But in the meantime, if parents out there are listening and have a way to offer some advice to other parents who struggle with this question, how do you handle it in your household? 816-235-2888 or email us UpToDate at kcur.org. Patty, do you have kids? How have you handled it in your household?
I would see this a little differently. I see having something like a cell phone as it's not a right. It's an earned thing that has responsibilities on the other side of it. I wouldn't have any problem, and I don't, with tying it to just being an adult. I mean, it would be like you let a child drive your car, you know, and that's become kind of another thing that children think they own the cars. They think they own the telephones, and it's just when you think about it, go back. I know my grandparents would not have a problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where have we become to think, you know, and it, like your host or your guest said, that the problem is the parents feel mm-hmm. like they will be penalized. So, you know, who needs to be more grown up in this situation? And what does it take? You know, when you look at what this idea of how it's progressing, that you're letting children make decisions that they're not capable of. And if they make a decision that is going to be, it seems like I say, I think you could ask any 90-year-old what you would do, and they would be able to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, parents, I'm not hearing from you yet. 816-235-2888. I'd like to get some calls in here because this is such a huge problem for so many parents. Kyra, how does it work in your household?
Well, we don't actually have a landline anymore. So my younger brothers, who are 12 and 14, have had a phone since they were like, I don't know, like 8, 10, yeah. You know, because they need some method of communication. And the kind of way my parents go about it is not necessarily continually like checking our phones, but under the understanding that, well, for a long time for me, it was under the it was understood that if my mom decided she wanted to look at my phone, like she could do that whenever she wanted. So it was kind
And did she exercise that, right?
She did occasionally, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I violated any trust there. And so I think after a while, she didn't do that as often. But mm-hmm. I mean, it was always still like present. And she does that more with my brothers.
I was going to say, does it go both ways here?
Yeah,
she
it does.
Checks the brothers too? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think people have a lot of different methods of doing it. And I kind of think it just depends on what your kids have engaged in the past, that kind of thing.
Different methods, meaning what have you seen? Your friends and their parents, what have they done?
Yeah. Some methods, some of my friends' parents take phones at like 9 p.m. or something. And like, so you can't be like texting after that time, or they do like checks and like go through things, which I don't know. I feel like that's maybe a little intrusive. I don't know if someone hasn't shown that needs to be done, if that should be like the first response necessarily. But I have seen that. And then there's just people who do more random checks. And then there's people who are completely hands off. So mm-hmm. there's a pretty wide range.
Wes, what have you seen, response. Wes?
Well, I think in my view, the issue of being able to control the phone is legitimate, and I have more ways to control phones than I will even go into today, being fairly techie myself. But I think what's more critical is that only be used to reinforce an ongoing dialogue about their proper use. For example, it's easy to see the problems of transmitting sexually explicit images, but there's a whole range of where that can become problematic. I know young people who will hand those out pretty routinely to people they just know, that because they like to show their bodies. That, to me, is more problematic than someone exchanging explicit, or what I would call, you know, the beachwear pictures are just ubiquitous at this mm-hmm. point. That's just many, many young people. But if they exchange those with a intimate partner, that's a little different psychology. Whether it's wise or not mm-hmm. is open for some real discussion. But if parents don't enter that conversation using that plus model we talked about last time, being pausing, listening, understanding, and being sex positive, they're just going to make kids go underground. And nowhere is it easier to go underground with your sexual expression, ironically, than with your phone. You can do a whole lot of things no one's going to catch you doing until it's a pretty big deal.
And parents, most of them, I'll speak about myself. I don't have the savvy to go out and figure out what you're talking about there or what they're doing.
Yeah. And so I think one wants to always, as a parent, just as you want your kids to have an ethical approach to using this equipment, you want to have an ethical approach to surveilling them. Mm-hmm. And there is a way to do that, but you want to think first about, what is the good I want to do here? What do I want to teach?
Mm-hmm. Has there been one method that's proven more effective than other methods from your friends? Kyra, what have you seen?
I think, honestly, I feel like teenagers find a workaround for most of them. Honestly,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could say that one method is more effective
than
the other.
They find a way around it being checked, you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the problem is that teens are a lot more tech savvy than the previous generations in a lot of cases. So they know ways to get around those checks, which is like very disconcerting, which I think is why it's really important to engage them in like those positive, like trusting dialogues, because there's only so much parents can do, you know? And so I think it's important to engage them in conversations and realistically lay out consequences that can happen because of your actions as a minor if you're
Do kids buy that, though, Kyra? I mean, you know, kids are living for today. The sense of 2, 3, 5 years from now and getting a job and people are going to look at your stuff and your Facebook page and all this, that is just might as well be 400 years down the road.
Right. And it's difficult, definitely. I mean, Wes always likes to bring up, like, the DARE program and how that didn't work at all with, like, marijuana use. But I think the key is to lay out those consequences very realistically. Be like, understand, you might not get caught you know, you probably won't. Mm-hmm. But if you do, here's what could happen. You know, you can't just say, like, sexting is definitely 100% going to result in you being a sex offender for the rest of your life, because then if you say something that's worthwhile later, your teen is just going to completely disregard all of it.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the bottom line. You're saying, Kyra, that the notion that parents can dive into a phone and figure out what's going on, technically speaking, that may be beyond their capabilities, but having conversations, having an open dialogue might be as good as they can do.
Exactly. And I think mm-hmm. you can say that about a lot of teen activities as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is an interesting paradox, because young people, and we encourage young people to understand the age of consent mm-hmm. in their state, and those vary a little bit in that you have open consent in Kansas, for example, at 16, and then at 15 you have what's called the Romeo and Juliet statute, so that if there's a certain age, closeness in age, then that's not really adjudicated as a sex offense. So kids know about that, but then we're also telling them you can go and have sex legally, but you can't transmit a picture of it. So they do not understand any difference there, and they know people over 18 are using this media in that way. And 16-year-olds kind of in our society have just decided they are 18. 16-year-olds don't read 17 mm-hmm. magazine. They read Cosmopolitan.
But this notion that Kyra is saying, that maybe open conversation is the best parents can do, do you buy that, or is that given up too easily?
I think that it is the core element, but the parent has the power to enforce that conversation with limits on the phone. And I'm all for that, as long as that's used judiciously and to teach a lesson. Mm-hmm. But it's like the pornography thing, and we did a good show about that a while back, and we may need to do another one because it's such a critical issue. If you are not going to prevent your child from seeing extremely explicit pornography, it is too easy to find. And so you have to engage in a conversation with them about what's problematic about pornography. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people haven't actually thought that through well enough to have a savvy conversation with kids. Same is true with them making their own explicit content.
You can find out more information on Dr. West's books and his consent-based sex education project at www.drwest.com. That's dr-west.com. Dr. West Crenshaw, always good to have you here. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Kyra Hashi added a lot to the show. Thank you very much, too.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. On tomorrow's show, the ship that brought us into World War I. Also, we learn about the world's oldest culture from a National Geographic photographer. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Lisa Rodriguez, Beth Lipoff, Eliza Spertus, Will Trumper, and Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.